and welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 428. My name is Tired James Gilmore. Joining me today is caffeinated Emily Soden.
But also mildly tired.
That's what the caffeinated's for, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it's caffeinated and then 99% delirious.
That's just maths. That's what happens when you add those two things together.
That's true.
I had more caffeine than I should this week because I have just come back from Pocket Gamer Connects, and you need to keep drinking coffee if you're going to talk to 2,000 people in a conference room and then interview all of them about ARPDAOs and their networking strategy for Q4 2018 and other things I don't really understand, but I pretend like I do in the videos. That's how the pros do it.
It's masterful.
I thought so. It was a really good show, just wandering around for 2 days and interacting with lots of lovely industry people. That was cool. And then we did the very first Mobile Game Awards. We launched an awards ceremony, Emily.
To be fair, that's rad, isn't it? And your venue as well was so iconic.
At BAFTA. And the videos that I made for the presentations didn't go wrong. And I'd spell all of the company names right. And I wasn't embarrassed in front of the entire industry, which was good.
Only from drunken shenanigans.
Only from that. So if I sound a little bit low energy today, it's just because we're recovering and we all just got back. But it was a good show. We're happy that we went to it. And you'll see lots of videos over there on Pocket Gamer Biz's YouTube channel, because we videotape all of the talks. The conferences have all these tracks in them where just basically developers and publishers and everyone else comes up and just talks about the thing that they're doing. And so there were like 300 speakers this year over 2 days.
Gosh, was that more than last year?
Yes, it is. And you'll be able to see the vast majority of their talks up there. So if you're interested in like games design, if you listen to this podcast, you probably like games. But if you like the development aspect of it and you want to know how this stuff gets made, how it gets produced, how it gets financed, any of that stuff, you have literally a gigantic library of experts telling you exactly that. Of course, what that really means is that I haven't had loads and loads of time to play new releases. So I've been catching up yesterday afternoon and today. And Em's been filling me in on news because we left you behind to man the news channels.
Yeah, not lots happened, at least, you know, just usual stuff.
I was very considerate of the world to realise that I was busy and not paying attention for a bit.
Yeah, that's true. But to be fair, most of them were probably at PGC.
That's also true, yeah. But big week for new releases, you guys. We're talking The Room, Old Sins, it's here, I've played it, and I'm excited. Thumper has appeared on iOS as well. I liked that game when it was on console, and do I like it on mobile? We will soon find out. Plus, we've got Out There Chronicles Episode 2 making an appearance on your iOS devices. A few other little things, Slime Pizza, Stack and Crack, we'll look into those a bit later. And we talked to the developer behind Warhammer Quest 2 about how he jumped studios to keep the franchise alive, and all about the new updates that are coming in the next couple of weeks. But first, it's the news. Miitomo is dead. Long live not Miitomo, because it's not coming back or being replaced by anything. It's been announced. Nintendo has confirmed something that was whispers in the wind for a little while, that the Miitomo app, which was launched, a year ago?
It was like 2016, I think.
Yeah, just over a year ago. It's being shut down. It is going to be no more. This is, to be honest, not the biggest surprise.
No. Even for me, it's not really that much of a surprise.
Because it was the first thing that Nintendo properly released on mobile, and everyone got very excited until they realised it was just basically a Mii standing in a room, and you could sort of chat to people and dress them up, but that was about it. It was a bit thin on actual gameplay. And it seems to be that that cost it big time. The Wall Street Journal reported it, admittedly, originally. And the reason they gave, or Nintendo has given, is that, quote, it failed to attract enough players.
Yeah. Well, there was just nothing to do, was there?
No. No, not really. I mean, I didn't go near it beyond the first couple of weeks. What I thought it was, because it made you answer loads of questions about yourself, and the kind of hook of it was you could ask other people questions, and then their Miis would tell you the answers that they had been pre-programmed with. So the idea was you just dumped a load of info into your Mii, and then when strangers came up and said, hey, what's your favourite colour? Your Mii would answer them, because you've given them a script, basically. I wondered if it was some kind of, like, stockpiling user info thing, So, which they could then use to inform future development stuff. So it's basically a big interactive survey.
Oh.
That was my theory anyway. It probably isn't true. But it was asking for a lot of information about you, like a dating profile or something. And I was like, what are you doing with this, Nintendo? What's your angle?
Yeah, oh, I like that though. That's really cool.
Is it? That's a bit sinister if you ask me.
No, I mean like for you to, you know, to come the up with that. It's like a, what's it called? Conspiracy.
It's a conspiracy. Yeah, and as a result, like with most conspiracy theories, probably bollocks. But one thing that's a little bit of a niggle, I suppose, for people is that it did have IAPs in it, and you could buy things like outfits. And now it's just being shut down after a year, so if you have spent any money, tough. Apart from people who still have credit, apparently Nintendo have said that they'll actually refund the credit that hasn't been spent within the game.
Yeah. I always feel a bit weird about games like this just shutting down and then there goes someone's money.
With the mobile space, it's just the thing that happens. Often it's because, same thing with MMOs, you know, most MMOs shut down quite soon because few of them manage to maintain the level of success needed to keep going. And so people have poured hours and hours and hours, and potentially money on premium stuff, and then it gets shut down. But if you buy into an ecosystem like that, it's one of the things you have to expect. It just comes with the territory. It's a bit of a shame, but even, you know, premium games stop working eventually after certain updates, and you just have to go, well, if I'm buying it on mobile, it's going to have a shelf life.
Yeah, I guess so.
I agree, it's a shame. It feels a bit like, ugh, but these things are always temporary, so you have to suck it up. But if you do have Miitomo coins, they will be refunded. So they can shop until May 9th if they want to, but the rest of it will just get kicked back to them, which is good. But it's not like it's all bad news, really, because they've had loads of success with the other stuff. So they're just shutting down Miitomo to focus on, you know, Super Mario Run and Fire Emblem and all the other properties that have rolled out since. So it's not, I don't think, that big a deal.
Nah, not really. Doesn't look like it is from all the people who have commented.
Are they not fussed? We haven't had a lot of outcry from PG readers going, no, my favourite app on my phone, it's gone.
No, I don't think. Mobile users worldwide, I think, are just like, eh. Right.
Well, you've got a little while, because apparently it's going to run until May the 9th. So that's when they're going to do the shutdown, which is like 4 months away. So you've got plenty of time to bimble around with it if you want to. Following up on something we talked about a couple of weeks back, Harry Potter Hogwarts Mystery, we had that trailer that appeared, and we wondered and speculated what it could be. And now it's been soft launched on Android devices, so you can actually go and download it and have a go in certain territories. I should hasten, not everywhere. We've actually had a look at the gameplay. I saw it for the first time today, but you posted it in your news thing. It looks like the predictions that you made when we were discussing it were pretty accurate.
Yeah, well, see, I've been in the game now for like a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say, like, but intensely in mobile gaming, and this is kind of the pattern I've seen. Of, you know, oh, it's a really promising looking RPG and this and that, but there's always the freemium side of things. Where IAPs can come into effect, if you know what I mean. And unfortunately, the gameplay looks like it may be a deal.
So the footage looks actually very good from people who've, like, you know, downloaded it in Android and recorded a chunk of it. It's really well presented. That stuff of it looking a bit like a Telltale game or something, it looks like that, almost better. Because the facial animations look really good, and they often sometimes don't in Telltale games. But all the character likenesses to the teachers are really spot on. It is quite conversational. There isn't voice acting in it. It's all done by text. However, despite all the lovely 3D animations and conversations and moving around and playing mini games, there are a whole bunch of currencies at the top of the screen. So purple gems have been introduced into the Harry Potter universe. Don't remember those from the films.
No, they were just cut out of the films and the books.
Don't remember the cooldown timers on using the spells, but there it is. It is free to play, and of course it was going to have that stuff in it. But I was impressed with the look of it, at least. Clearly, Harry Potter, that franchise, not short of a few quid. Gameplay-wise, it looks a little bit tap this thing, then tap this thing, then tap this thing, and bunny flies at the screen.
I really wanted this to be good. And I know after the last session I said, I'm not sure how to feel about it, and I still don't know how to feel about it, but I'm less excited about it now than I was a week ago.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to bust out an international account, find out what territory it's in. I'm going to play the damn thing. I want to get some video of this and see what the score is.
Yeah, I think it's Southeast Southeast Asia. There's some other places as well in Europe. It could turn out to be that they've balanced it all properly. Like, I don't mind IAPs being in the game so long as they don't force you to use them.
No.
Like, if you can play through the whole game comfortably without having to dig into it, that's fine. But if you put a timer on a spell or on certain things, which is like 3 hours long or 24 hours long or something, that's just where you lose me.
But then what you do is you use Hermione's special lockety thing and you wind time forward and just jump over all the cooldown periods. That's what you do, isn't it?
Yeah. But in this one, Hermione's only a baby.
Oh, yeah. But that thing, surely, that relic that she had, that must be like well old.
Surely,
someone can find it somewhere. I don't know where it came from.
I can't remember, to be honest. I need to read the books again.
I bet you've read them more than once.
Of course I've read them more than once. I've got a special edition set downstairs.
Ooh la la. One final thing from the newsy section. This is something you covered at the very end of last week after we recorded the podcast, but was kind of heartening. It warmed me because, you know that thing where Cuphead came out for like an hour or two on the App Store?
Yep.
And everyone was like, no way, and looked at it, and the App Store listing was legit, and people downloaded it, and it was the game. And we were like, holy cow, this came out of nowhere. And then the developer of Cuphead, NDHR, came out and went, yeah, no, we totally didn't release Cuphead, are you mad? And then it got pulled from the App Store quite quickly, because it was just some shyster who had managed to get it past the App Store greenlight process somehow. The developer's response to it was, look, this wasn't our thing. We had nothing to do with it. Obviously, don't be ridiculous. Since then, they've addressed it in a kind of more broad way. And this is Chad Moldenhauer, I think his name is, who says, it opened our eyes to show us how big the Cuphead IP is spreading around the game sphere. We just thought it was a little bit odd that it wasn't caught on Apple's end, which is why we were surprised, because it looked really legit. And it's quite difficult to get through the Apple approval process. So for this to make it through was a real shock. But the thing that warmed my heart a bit was him saying that the game, as it is right now, would never work on mobile. If we do something in future on mobile, it would have to be from the ground up and something totally different. That is the correct thing to say about a really hard Twitch platformer that was designed to be played with a controller.
Yep. Can you imagine how chaotic it would be to try and bring that to mobile?
Yeah, so like that is exactly the right thing to hear from developers, acknowledging the differences between platforms, not just going, oh yeah, I'll do it in, we'll do Cuphead, we'll stick some floating joysticks on the side of it and it'll be fine. Because with a game like Cuphead, from all the reports of, you know, just how hard it is and just how twitchy it is and just how bang on you need to be, I don't think it would work on iOS, much like a lot of really twitchy platformers don't work on iOS. And it's really nice to see people continuing to acknowledge this in a sensible way and not just bringing it over to try and make a quick buck by superimposing loads and loads of rubbish controls on top of it and having the game be inferior quality.
Yes, I think you're absolutely right. It'd be so easy for someone to go, oh, there's like a huge hype around it. Clearly people want it. This could be a really, really easy way to get loads of money.
Mm.
But the devs are just like, nah, this is our baby. It's not going to work. We don't want to ruin it.
No. And that's really good to hear. I mean, there's nothing to stop them from developing a mobile-specific game that has different mechanics that would work on the system, which is what you said. It had to be from the ground up and something totally different, but not the game in its native form. And so this is good, and it gives me hope. The Warhammer universe has expanded its tendrils into every type of game, really, starting from the tabletop stuff. But more recently, obviously, it's taken the form of games, whether that be recreations of the straight-up war games, other IPs that belong to their franchise. I'm still waiting for that Necromunda game. Or Warhammer Quest, which appeared on mobile, a good, like, 3-4 years ago, I think. The original Warhammer Quest arrived. We rather liked it. It was developed by Rodeo, and now we have Warhammer Quest 2 available on iPhone, iPads, and has been for a while. We've got some new content coming up, and to tell us all about it is Ben Murch from Pachang. Thanks for joining me today, Ben.
Hello. Well, thanks for having me.
First of all, Because you originally started out at Rodeo, and Rodeo was the developer of the original Warhammer Quest that appeared on mobile, did you have a hand in that? Are you the bridging gap between it starting out with Rodeo and then moving on to Pachang as a developer for the sequel?
Yeah, so so we started up Rodeo Games, I guess, maybe 7-8 years ago, quite a long time ago. And there were four of us initially, and I was very much the art. There were a couple of coders and a business guy as well.
Okay.
And we did a couple of games in the Hunters series, which was our own IP, which, you know, caught the eye of Games Workshop. And so we sort of ended up doing the Warhammer Quest stuff.
See, I remember the Hunters games and when they came out and when they said that they were going to be using you guys to do the Warhammer thing. It's like, that makes perfect sense because it was that top-down grid-based strategy thing. And you're like, yes, this is a perfect fit.
Yeah, it was a funny story, actually, because I was going over to E3 on, sat on a plane going over there with my buddy. Mm-hmm. And sat right next to us was this guy playing one of the Hunters games on his iPad.
Oh yeah.
Which was just a weird coincidence because that never ever happens. You know, I go on trains and things like this and you never see people playing your own games. And it turned out he was one of the licensing or head of licensing for Games Workshop. So
wow, that is serendipity.
I know, it was like the best meeting we'd had all that week, and it was sort of like on the plane going over there, you know. It was a perfect fit, really. And then we sort of at Rodeo Games, we did another game with Games Workshop, which was 140,000 Death Watch.
Oh yes, I remember that too.
Yeah, and that was kind of the last game for that studio, really, because it just got to the point where people just wanted to go their own separate ways and do different projects from each other. I mean, it's a bit like a band sort of splitting up or something. You do a couple of things together that makes sense. Mm. And then as soon as people start getting pulled in different directions, it makes sense to go your separate ways, really.
I see. But that turned out not to be the end for your journey with Games Workshop, because you went on to form Pachang, right?
Yeah, so my friend Pete Aikhurst, who is a co-founder of Pachang, it's me and him. Mm-hmm. And I'd wanted to work with him for ages because we worked together back in the old days at Codemasters.
Oh, right.
Because they had a Guildford studio and we sort of met there and we're sort of good buddies. So so we both had about 6 months of free time on our hands. And we just said, well, why don't we start a company? And had this idea about doing this kind of physics-based puzzler type thing. And we wanted it to be a test bed for using Unity, the engine.
To see
what that was like, because we'd not used that before in any of our projects. The ultimate idea was always to do another Warhammer Quest. Mm. And at that point, we were kind of talking to Games Workshop. But we didn't want to jump straight into a big project like that without testing out the engine first.
Got you.
So we sort of did that with Pachang. And that worked out ridiculously well.
See, that's another one that we covered and reviewed and liked, because it's that very... It's quite elegant and simple in terms of the visual design. It's sort of stark whites and block colours, but the idea that it's all based around getting objects from one place to another across the map, if you like, across the play area. But often you're using... yeah. It's all physics, and it's you moving fans around and flicking buttons on and off and that kind of thing. So it's that interactive puzzle machine.
Yeah, it's a bit like... what's it called? Rube Goldberg?
Rube Goldberg machine, that's right.
There we go, like one of those, yeah. That's kind of where some of the inspiration came from. And also it's just a bit of a palate cleanser, because at that point I'd been doing turn-based strategy games for about 4 or 5 years.
Okay, and you wanted some real-time fun.
Yeah, just want to try something a little different, see if you still got it, you know.
So if that was a testbed for Unity, using that, what was the original Warhammer Quest built in?
The original Warhammer Quest was Rodeo Games' own engine.
Oh, okay, the one you used for Hunters.
Yeah, because it wasn't... back when we did Hunters, that was the sort of iPhone 3GS was the brand new thing at the time.
Yeah.
And people weren't pushing polygons around with it, not particularly. It wasn't very powerful. So all those games... Warhammer Quest was the first one that used sort of polygons with 3D characters.
Okay.
But the games before that were all sprite-based.
Gotcha. But it was locked into a kind of fixed top-down... angle in the first game, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, it was, because those backgrounds, those environments were all just 3D renders. So I would sort of make the actual dungeon and then just get an orthographic camera from on top and take a screenshot of it.
I see.
And then we sort of stitch them together to make these levels, which is super different to Warhammer Quest 2, which is all sort of fully 3D, fully fledged, you know, because...
Yeah, you can whip the camera around and you can tilt and pan and all that business.
Do all that kind of stuff, yeah. It's just, you know, a testament to how much mobile phones and mobile devices have come these days, you know. They're sort of, well, the top-end ones are more powerful than, you know, the 360 and stuff like that, right?
It's balmy.
It is balmy, yeah.
So if you've played both Warhammer Quest and Warhammer Quest 2, I'm speaking to the listeners here, you will notice the visual difference. When you first fire it up, it looks, because it kind of defaults to the straight top-down view, and you're like, oh yeah, I remember this. But then there's a lot more movement with the camera, you can reposition everything. You will notice it's all rendered in 3D, lighting's more impressive, and all that kind of business. The game has also had some tweaks as well, in terms of the way that you deal with the characters and upgrade them and so forth. What were the major differences that you're like, right, for Chapter 2, here's what we want to do different?
Yeah, this is an interesting one. I was talking to someone about this the other day, and I personally learned a really big lesson from all of this, is that you know, when you're doing a sequel to something that is, you know, the original Warhammer Quest was really, really well received, it's pretty big audience, and so when you're planning a sequel for that, you've really got to bear in mind what the kind of the player base and the fans want, from it. And so, and what we did was sort of more like, you know, Radiohead's fourth album or something, where it goes a little bit crazy, it's a bit experimental.
Okay.
Which, you know, retrospectively, maybe not the best idea. I mean, I absolutely love the game. It's really cool. But I think maybe we sort of opened it up a bit too much. So the idea behind this one is that we wanted to take off all of those restrictions and all those sort of boundaries that you had in the first game. So in the first game, you had your four characters, and they could have certain weapons, and it was all pretty straightforward. You know, weapons leveled up. There was a normal sword, and then a masterwork sword, and all this kind of thing. And with this, we just sort of took the idea of, you know, like the way Games Workshop works with their miniatures. And it's if you could just take whatever you wanted to in the dungeon. So if you like Dark Elf Sorceresses, then you could buy four of those and just take them into a dungeon. And then just, you know, just give them all health potions if that's what you wanted to do.
Yeah.
And they just fight with their fists. I guess another part of it is that the traditional idea of leveling is totally different in this game. So rather than, you know, you sort of go up levels and you get more and more powerful. In this one, we tried to think of... leveling wide rather than leveling up.
Okay.
So you just get more options, basically, and more ways of taking down enemies. But you know, you come across a beast man and he's gonna be tough, and even if you're sort of level 6, he's still going to be tough. The idea is that a beast man is a beast man, you know, he's always going to be a tough guy. And with a more sort of traditional game, you'd encounter these enemies when you're sort of level 1 and level 2. By the time you get to level 6 or 7, they're just, you know, you just knock them aside and there's nothing to it.
So, I mean, we reviewed it very positively. Our reviewer really liked the changes. So I imagine some people were a little bit maybe confused or thrown off by the differences versus the original game, which, as you say, it's a really delicate balance. You're trying to, everyone wants the same thing, but different. And that's an impossible thing to deliver sometimes.
I think it's the damned if you do, damned if you don't thing. And this sounds quite negative, actually. I mean, the vast majority of people really like it, and they've been very positive, and we get lots of nice fan mail, and that's really great. But it's one of those things that, as a creative person, you always try and look for different ways of doing things, stuff that interests you and projects that interest you. I mean, that's kind of why you go into independent development as a person anyway, because, you know, you want to do these things that you want to do rather than the next Call of Duty, you know, the next game that's just effectively the same thing but with a new skin on it.
And now you're bringing in some new content in the very near future, like a couple of weeks, right?
Yeah, so it's coming out on the 8th of February. The expansion is called The Lord of Khorne.
Right.
So if you sounded like you're a bit familiar with the Warhammer universe.
I've crossed paths with it, so yeah.
Yeah, okay. So one of the Chaos Gods, the one you're fighting in the main game, is Nurgle, who is the God of Decay. And then we did an expansion pack, which was with the Skaven. And this expansion is fighting against the Chaos God Khorne,
right,
who is kind of the blood god, the really vicious, nasty, violent one. Mm. So it's kind of a whole new region, all these quests. And we've sort of taken the approach of each one is almost like a mini boss fight.
Oh, okay.
So they're all really a lot tougher. This is kind of for people that, if you're just starting out with the game, maybe don't get this one just yet. play through the initial campaign first. But it's meant to be sort of challenging and offering something that's a bit different and really kind of focusing on the bosses. So, you know, these seven different Lords of Khorne. Mm. Well, not Lords of Khorne, but, you know, Heroes of Khorne. And it's got a nice little story going through there as well. But we've also added in a new feature for dungeon ambushes, which is something that was in the first game and we missed out for this one. But we've put it in there now. So when you're going through a dungeon, there is a chance you'll be randomly ambushed by some characters.
Yeah, kind of that RPG random encounter thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And it really sort of ratchets up the tension, especially when you're in these new dungeons, which are quite tough. There's no safe ground anymore. There's no kind of hiding behind doors and just waiting for, you know, something to recharge. Because you've always got to be on the move, so that's kind of cool. And we've also got three new warrior classes that are coming out. So that's the Wood Elf Ward. This is a bit of an exclusive, actually. I don't think we've talked about this yet.
Okay.
It's the Wood Elf War Dancer, the Warrior Priest, mm-hmm. and God, why am I drawing a blank? It's the Ogre, of course.
Right, gotcha.
Sorry. Working sort of, you know, long hours and stuff.
I suppose one of the huge benefits of working within the Warhammer universe is that it is vast and it's been running for so long now that the potential for, like, right, what can we introduce now? You're sort of spoilt for choice, aren't you?
Yeah. And that's one of the interesting design, choices that you have to make is sort of picking out the best of these characters, but also choosing the ones that are going to really impact the game in kind of a meaningful way. So we do listen to all the feedback we get, you know, going through the forums and things like this. And something that a couple of people were after was making characters feel a bit more different. Because we've got this very wide open, you know, equip anything to anyone kind of idea.
Mm.
They wanted sort of a bit more focus on the actual classes themselves. So things like the War Dancer has this special ability just for the War Dancer, which is leap. So he can leap over enemies now, which really sort of changes up the way that dungeons work. Because if there's a great big cluster of enemies in the middle, he can just jump over the other side.
Yeah, you can get bottlenecked, can't you?
Yeah, absolutely. So that really sort of changes that up. And the ogre has like a charge where he can charge through enemies and things like this. So it's kind of about the way we want to go forward and you know, add extra stuff to the game is not just throwing more content, but it's more of the same. Mm. Is sort of putting more content in there that actually does something a little bit different. I think that's kind of reflected in you know, the way we've approached this campaign by making it more kind of about tough bosses. And these new warriors, which sort of act in different ways to the original ones.
Okay. Are you interested in continuing it? Is there like a third one that you're considering? Or would you like another palate cleanser, like with the Pachang that you released in between? Are you craving real-time action again? Or
Well, we've got so many ideas for this one.
Yeah.
There's this whole bucket list of ideas, stuff like multiplayer and all this kind of stuff that we'd to add in. But the general idea is to add stuff to the engine that we're making, this mm-hmm. turn-based strategy engine, so that we can always plug this into future games. Yeah, I mean, okay. I personally absolutely love working with Games Workshop. They're really great. I've been a Warhammer fan since I was a youngster, you know.
Mm.
So just getting to do that is amazing.
Excellent. Well, we look forward to what you do next. We're fans over this way. Back and tell us about it when you can speak.
Excellent. I will do.
Out and about this week, we're going to start with The Room Old Sins. Been waiting for it for bloody ages. No secret that I love this franchise. Always banging on about it when it comes to talking about controls. And I have played not enough of this yet, because when it came out yesterday, it didn't work on either of my devices. Even my iPad Air 2 was like, no. And I thought that they had been very, very mean and made it incompatible with iPad Air 2s. Turned out some weird launch update bug thing, because I fired them up again this morning just to check, and it worked! And so I was able to play through the prologue in the next chapter. And I'm so happy it's here, Em, because it's just really good again.
Yeah, is the world bright again?
It is, in that dark, grim, slightly Cthulhu way that that it is in the room universe. But that makes me very happy. And yes, obviously, it's much more familiar. Its mechanics aren't brand new. We've played three of these games already, so we kind of know what the score is, and the proddy and the double tap and the looking around and the using the eyeglass to see the hidden symbols and then the pulling levers and the turning keys and all that, like unlocking puzzle boxes. It's that. The framing device is lovely this time, as in you're in an attic and the idea is you're exploring a doll's house. So there were bits in the room three where you would see like a... There was a map, a kind of a Game of Thrones looking map table, actually. And out of this map table, it would build structures. So in the same way the intro of Game of Thrones, all of a sudden all those castles come flying out there and assemble themselves. It was a bit like that. But then you could actually go into them by double tapping, and you kind of swoop inside as if you had been miniaturized to the size of a borrower. And you could look around inside the objects. It's kind of dealing with that. So there's just dollhouse sitting there, and you zoom inside the front of the doll's house, and suddenly you're in it like it's a massive building. And then there are puzzle boxes on the tables in there, and that's what you're moving around and exploring. The rest of the stuff is very, very familiar. So you're still, you know, using objects, discovering them, using those to unlock different things, recognizing patterns, and all the other shtick. It's got lovely atmospheric business. The music remains the same, to the point where I'm now familiar with the music. It kicked in and I went, I hadn't even really considered the twinkly music theme, although that it has a theme, but it does, and heard it and went, oh yes, I'm home. Creepy ass home. So Harry reviewed it. He's played more than me. Gold from him. 9 out of 10. The only downside you can really say is that it is similar to the old games. So you do know what you're getting with it, but it does put enough little spins on it. The dollhouse is a lovely, neat idea. It feels a bit more dynamic in the way that you move between not just rooms, but you're slipping between scale much more now, you know, zooming into things and zooming back out, embiggening yourself, as Ralph Wiggum might say. But there's still no franchise that comes close to this in terms of like polish and presentation and intelligence and all the other things that you would want out of a puzzle game. So if you like The Room, you will like The Room Old Sins. And if you've never played any of them, for God's sake, get on board. Where have you been this whole time? It's one of the best things on mobile. You've been playing some Switchy action, haven't you? A little platformer that came over, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's like a lot of the stuff with Nintendo Switch. It's another port, mm-hmm. but a very good one. And it's called Shoe, or Shuh, or Shoe.
Shoe. S-H-U, right?
Yeah. By CoatSync, you know those lads.
Okay.
It's just a very colourful, delightful platformer, really. You've got segments of the world you've got to get to, mm-hmm. Three levels in each part, and on the end of the third level is when you have to run away from this massive storm that's kind of killing all your villagers and destroying everything in its path, and it's bloody terrifying.
Also, it's like a chase sequence where you have to jump to all the platforms right, and if you miss one, then you're doomed.
Yeah, because the storm has, like, teeth, and it's like a monster.
Oh, man.
Yeah, and you get 5 lives each time you hit a checkpoint when you get sort of replenished, but as soon as you lose all your lives, you have to start the whole thing again. Not the whole game, but the whole level.
I had a look at it in a trailer or video or something, and it's kind of like a less shiny, less 2.5D looking Ori and the Blind Forest, as it's a fantastical fantasy land thing going on.
Yeah, oh, I love Ori and the Blind Forest. It's one of my favourite games.
It's very pretty.
Very pretty.
And so this came over from Steam. I saw some reviews of it earlier.
Yeah, it's been on like Steam, PS Vita, PlayStation 4, and various other platforms.
But does it handle okay on the Switch?
Yeah, do you know, it handles just great. It obviously feels very natural and handheld because of the nature of its genre.
Mm.
its controls like can occasionally be a little bit slippy.
Slippy?
Yeah, so like when you land, you kind of slide a little bit.
Ah, okay.
Or like when you run and jump, you kind of keep on going.
Yeah, yeah, that momentum.
Yeah, yeah. But it's good. It's the right kind of challenging. The levels are the right length.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're not so short that you feel like you're getting mugged for your money, but they're not so long that you feel like, you know, just come on, end it now, sort of
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's unique. It's very, I mean, it's partly unique. It's cool because it's not just the running jumping mechanic. You've also got different friends to rescue during the levels, mm-hmm. which give you different abilities.
Okay.
So some people can let you walk on water and some will let you crash through crates and all sorts of things. Big guy.
Right.
You don't get that stuff all the time. They kind of just give it to you in drips and drabs.
Okay, so you get moments of empowerment.
Yeah, and it's nice. Like, it makes you not get comfortable with the way things are, if you know what I mean.
Okay. Okay. What's the name of it again?
Shoe.
Okay. You can get that downloadable for the Vita. Downloadable for the Switch at the minute. The other big release on iOS this week that I've played is Thumper, which I've talked about on podcasts in the past as a game that I like from console. And I was interested to see how they would handle the controls on iOS. The answer is really quite well, as it turns out. So you should be familiar with it from consoles, but if not, it's kind of a rhythm racer almost, where you're a little scarab, beetle, bug, silver thing rocketing down what looks like the track of a roller coaster. And little light bars come flying down the track towards you, and you have to tap at the right time. And it goes, this is actually a rhythm music action game. Because it doesn't really sound like it when you first boot it up, because the background is just going with this weird industrial sound, and you kind of go, it just sounds like background noise, but you do realise it is actually pulsing to a rhythm. And then the idea is when you're hitting the light bars that are coming towards you, much like the coloured circles that come down the screen on a Guitar Hero or something, and when it passes under your little scarab, it's like, you tap, and it goes, makes a cool sound. But then you have to start swerving around corners, and if you don't swerve in time, then you just crash off and die. Then you have to start jumping with your little wings fluttering and avoid laser beams that are crossing the path. Get over those, do a dodge, go around the side, and it starts getting a lot more complicated. But it is just handled quite elegantly with a series of taps and swipes, and it feels very natural. It feels very comfortable. It's better than I thought it would be. And it's a lot cheaper, so it's £4.99 or $4.99, which I should also say is the same price as The Room, Old Sins. That's what they're charging for it. It's a good week for premium stuff that isn't going to make you hand gems over to Harry Potter or whatever.
You've still got hope.
But we are going to do a review for it, so keep your eyes peeled for a final score. Thumper Pocket Edition is the full name of it, so go and have a look at that. Now, Out There Chronicles, this was a weird one, because when Out There came out, it was that thing that felt a little bit like FTL, but more story-driven, where you're having to get your ship back to, forget if it was a planet or the center of the universe or something, but it was really good and fun and a bit quirky and odd. And then they released an interactive novel version called Out There Chronicles, which also turned out to be surprisingly good. Chapter 2's out now, and you can get it for £2.99 or $2.99. I never finished the first one, so I'm not primed for this new thing, but it was promising, and the first one was kind of good. So that's worth a look, potentially. And now, I can't even say this. Omniogi?
I don't know. Do you ever get this thing where, like, you read game names and you get a song?
No, but...
No? What
song are you thinking of?
Well, when I... Because this was in soft launch. Like, for ages, and then it finally came out. So anytime I go past it when I'm updating my soft launch article, I read it as On My OG, which okay. Obviously butchers it, but it's I spell it out phonetically so I don't misspell it.
Yeah.
And I always think of the Les Mis song On My Own, except it goes On My OG. Such a nightmare. I think this is why I just talk to myself all the time, because I'm doing these articles, and then anytime a game name sounds remotely like a song, it then gets stuck in my head, like Durango.
That's your way. What does Durango sound like then?
Django. You know, the Django soundtrack.
Oh, okay.
Django, Durango. I have no excuse to be this mad.
This is what we get when, if we leave you alone to go to a conference, you come back and you've been just singing like the titles of breakfast cereals and stuff at you. Oh, dude. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, that's a little insight into my mind, so. Right. You'll never forget how to spell it, though.
On My Own, G, is a anime RPG that apparently has been massively huge in Asia and has just appeared now on mobile. I haven't played it. It all looks very anime-ish. Lots of big hair. Big hair and partial nudity. And so you guys can download that for free, only on iOS at the minute. But you can give that a go. We've got Meteor Fall, which is a deck-building roguelike. So some card game stuff. This one looks like it's been drawn by the people who drew Adventure Time. So daft, slightly weird cartoony art that looks nice. This is a premium thing. I haven't played it yet. Apologies for all the things I haven't played this week, but I've been super busy. And there's also Stack and Crack, which is a grid-based puzzler where you're trying to guide blocks towards a beam of light that's nestled on one of the grids to complete the level. It looks like the blocks are directional. You can only move them in certain ways. Some will move diagonally, some will move horizontally or vertically, and you've got to be careful and clever. This is what I've been able to derive from the trailer. Again, haven't played it, but it's 99p or 99 cents out right now. Okay, that's it for this week. Apologies if I was vague and sketchy. But that's exactly how I feel right now.
It's okay. It's almost the weekend.
I wanted to be all like high energy and prime because like Thumper's great and the room is great. But I'm sorry, I'm running on fumes. I'll be a little bit more lively next week, hopefully. And come back and join us then for more mobile chatter, as always. In the meantime, have a good week. Go and play The Room. And we'll see you next week for more. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.
See ya.